and brightest day, in blackest night, all other podcasts tremble in fright. Losers cower before the power. Orange is lust, and blues you can trust. Indigos feel, and white ones heal. Yellow scare, and green ones dare. That sapphire love and black hands glove will rock your foundation without hesitation. Chad and Mars face evil's might. Respect their power, for they'll make you see the light.
Hey everyone, I'm Mark Marble.
And I'm Chad Bokelman.
And this is the Lantern Cast.
Episode 632.
We got feedback. We are making a dedicated effort to begin 2026 by catching up on our undiscussed feedback. So that's what this
is. And hopefully thus set us up for doing better in 2026.
Yes, 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 yes. And which should naturally be the case because there's also less books.
Yeah.
At least as, I mean, technically speaking, there might be as many ongoing books or regular books, quote unquote, but one, no matter how you want to look at it. But the fact that we're not really covering Absolute on a regular basis just gives us two Green Lantern books. So this does give us a bigger opportunity to not let these things build up, so we don't need necessarily a full dedicated episode every single time, because that's what kind of, it becomes like a snowball going downhill. It makes it difficult to bite the bullet. We like doing it, but it makes it difficult to bite the bullet because we know we have to shovel through a lot. Like this weekend's winter storm, apparently. All right. So we will begin. We will begin with Jamie. This is your moment, Jamie. I know you've probably been patiently waiting for this for like 9 months now. But this is your time to shine. Or maybe we should say it's Chad's time to shine. But we roll into
God, let it go.
Well, it's easy to say, but like you said, I've been alluding to it, but nobody knows why. but this is kind of like the appetizer, because this is pretty generic and non-Chad specific. All right, so Jamie writes, "Hey, it's Jamie. I was listening to episode 495, which was referring to Dark Crisis. It was a Dark Crisis episode we did when Dan was on. And Dan said Robin number one was very bad. He goes, I loved it. I've read over 3,400 comics in the last 5 years, and that series was some of the best. It's crucial Damian lore. He should give it a second shot."
Yeah, I don't know if he's referring to something. Is he talking about Damian's first solo Robin series or something Dark Crisis related? Obviously, it's been so long since episode 495. I can't possibly remember what Dan was referring to.
Dan's point was, yeah. That is unfortunately, you are correct. That one's up in the air about exactly specifically which point he was trying to make. But I'm not a big Damian guy, so I can't really comment one way or the other.
Yeah. All right. Moving on to the next one.
Yes.
Do you want to read this one?
I think we just know. I'm going to read the next one. You read this one.
The one titled Chad.
Yes. Yes. You read the one titled Chad. I read.
Yeah.
The one
yeah. And I'll have you read your response to him, and then I'll read his next.
Okay. Okay. That works. Okay. Yeah. So you read the initial email. I'll read my response to him, and then you read that response. Yeah, it works. Yeah.
Jamie says, "Hi guys, it's Jamie again. I'm now on episode 501, and the last few I've listened have mentioned Chad leaving. I don't like that. I scrolled ahead and checked episodes after that and saw his name, but I'm very much hoping he didn't become the new Jim. You know, the guy who left but is on like 20% of the podcast.
Ouch.
I know that the Lantern Cast was created by Dan and Jim, but Chad is the Lantern Cast." I can't even read it
with a straight face. Go ahead.
"His whole heart and his soul are seen in each episode. I truly hope this is a comedy thing and he is going to maintain his presence with Mark. If he is leaving or did, since I'm behind, this will hurt more than when Dan left. P.S. Love this show, and Mark, you are cool too."
I haven't read this in so long. At least it does bring, I feel like the Joker, it brings a smile to my face. And my response to him was, "Chad is the Lantern Cast, the heart and soul. Okay, you just lost all credibility. Clearly, this must be Chad or a close relative writing in. Laugh out loud."
He says, haha, I never met Chad, but with the all the times Jim picked on him because he became the underdog, like when they let Rudy play football in the movie Rudy. And who is the heart and soul? Jim Ford. I'm Dan Kurtzky. Chad doesn't get an introduction, and this is the main Lantern cast. I don't know. I stand by my statements.
Jamie, you ignorant slut. Oh,
obviously,
man.
Referring to my battle with diverticulitis and the partial colectomy that I had to deal with back in 2020-2021.
I guess. I mean, I just thought he was referring. I thought at that moment he was referring to just when you were on, when you were the third host, the third wheel.
Well, no, when he was talking about Chad leaving.
No. He's talking about the world without a Bokelman. That's right, what he's talking. No. No, you, Chad, that was in 2020. He's talking about when you, he's talking about the work, which, yes, it was, people really bought it, and I'll pat myself on the back for that, among others, because it was my idea. But the idea that you were being replaced, that's what he's referring to, that storyline, the world without a Bokelman storyline, which I think that's what we call that storyline, not with. It was the reign of the 399s. We were waiting for you to come back. Well, we kept doing 399 episodes, so we wouldn't do 400 until you were healthy enough to make your presence felt again.
I'm sorry. Time in relation to episode numbers is hard.
I know. On some level, considering we've been doing this in friggin' 170 after a while. Yeah. All right. So I will do. This is about this tells you how long ago it's been.
Oh, I should say thank you, Jamie, for your sentiments. I appreciate it, heart and soul. I don't know. I think it's actually a personality problem. Is sometimes I embody the identity of the Lantern cast. Like I make it too big of a part of my personality in some respects, and I worry that I lean on that a little too much sometimes. So. But it doesn't mean I'm putting in more work than Mark, or that Mark doesn't do his fair share or enjoy it more or less than me. So, you know, except for those times early on in our partnership when I said, and I brought Mark on.
Yeah, but you still kind of you did something like that, by the way, in the movie episode we just did. It's like you didn't say you brought me on, but the way you were making it sound like you were shepherding me through. And I understand what you meant, and I didn't say anything because there was some truth in it, but it did kind of sound along the same line.
Oh, what I said about why we were doing the movie episodes to kind of get you
partially
comfortable
with podcasting. So this Jamie's next email is about Alan Scott, episode 536, which was the first issue of that Alan Scott miniseries. So he goes, Jamie goes, hey, Mark, I was just listening to episode 536, and I thought it was one of the best episodes the show has had. Like Chad said near the end of it, it's a hard topic to cover, and all of you articulated your arguments so well. I enjoyed the conversation a lot. Thank you guys for all you do. And my reply was, thanks, Jamie. You have been redeemed partially. Now in my eyes. Laugh out loud.
Yeah, Alan Scott, issue number one of the miniseries. I think we talked a lot about the.
Yes, it's Chad's favorite feedback person, but not his favorite topic.
No, it's such a hard thing to tackle without, especially in this day and age, without, you know, dancing that line. So you're like, you know, not coming across a certain way, and people aren't reading intent into what you're saying that you don't intend. So
that episode was hard for multiple reasons. That did not go, at least the first half of that episode when we recorded it, did not go the way certainly I expected it to go. So that was it worked out fine, but it just was. So, and I'm kind of in a way it was good that Dan, I think Dan was there too. And but in a while, on one, it's always good when Dan's on, but in a way that, I mean, you and I would have probably had a different dynamic in that if we were solo too. So it's, but either way, ultimately it was better that Dan was on. But yeah, it was that certainly was not the best approach DC could have had to a topic. But hey, such is life. So you want to do the comics one?
Yep. He said, hey, it's Jamie again. I've caught up to 2024. It still sounds like Chad doesn't have the DC Universe app. He says things like, I don't pick up this book, so I haven't read it. My question is why? Because it's way cheaper than physical books. Easy. I have a sickness. Now, collector mentality is part of it. Also, you know, I don't like reading things on digital. I hate to sound like an old curmudgeon, but I've tried tablets with the lit background. I've tried the kind of reader tablets that are like they make the screen look as much like paper as possible. Like, what was the old Barnes and Noble thing called? Like before a Kindle, they had their own sort of
Nook.
Yeah, the Nook. So like it made it look flat and the black print, so it was easier on your eyes. Like I tried all of the different, you know, e-reader type technologies out there, but nothing compares to having the actual book in your hands, I think. Plus, you know, they go hard on variants in this era. And quite honestly, yes, sometimes there's going to be a variant where I'm just like, holy shit, I have to have that particular cover. So the only way to get that would be obviously purchasing the actual comic. And I don't know, I derive some sick, twisted, you know, ego probably from being able to say I have a complete run of A, B, C, D, whatever the thing may be. So, you know, kind of maintaining my Green Lantern collection is, regardless of whether I like the series, you know, myself personally or not, is sort of irrelevant because I just like having all of them if I can, because that's just a fun thing to say you have. And, you know, it's we're in an era sometimes where things are not going to get repented. As a matter of fact, this stuff we talked about it relatively recently, the stuff about Gerard Jones. Obviously, Gerard Jones's era is probably not going to get reprinted anytime soon, if at all. So you never know what's going to happen. And sometimes the only way to go back and read that stuff is if you have the actual content in your collection, because I wouldn't trust DC Universe to allow that stuff to remain up for X amount of time. And just like any streaming service, people take stuff down from the library all the time. What if I want to read something that they don't have in the library at that time?
No, I agree. It is true. Things leave all the time. And that was what both Disney Plus and WB had been. That was kind of their big thing last year, that they were removing things from their library when you would think there was no, other than financial reasons, which is why they did it pretty much, that you would think logically, hey, it's theirs, it's their own product, it's their own series, it's going to be there forever. It's like, apparently not. I mean, I like, the only thing I can really read on comfortably is the Kindle Paperwhite, but that's only like at night, you know, when the lights are out and I have the TV on then, because that screen is really well designed for that. To me, it's not as comfortable reading it during the day. I mean, I can, but I don't like reading on my Kindle Fire because that's not really designed for reading. You can do it. I mean, it's good if you download a comic book or something, then that's what you want to read it on, because the Paperwhite's black and white. And plus, when you comes to a book, I mean, besides feeling it, it's the smell of the book. It's everything. It's not just a tactile thing. So there's a certain amount of books, no matter what, I have, you know, it's like you can't read it. For me, I can't read indefinitely on a Kindle. I have a bunch of books I alternate. So like I still have three or four books that I haven't completely read, including the Jemison book that I downloaded for free ages ago. And there's like at least two books I'm actively in the middle of reading now on the Kindle Fire, but you go back and forth.
Yeah, part of it is too the ease of it, being able to read on one of those e-readers, because it's almost too easy, because if I'm laying in bed reading it, it's too comfortable to do that. And there's almost an inherent, not like incredible discomfort, but just enough discomfort that you can't necessarily fall asleep as easily reading a book as you can like a tablet. Because how many of us have been scrolling on our phones, for instance, and just been falling asleep and dropped our phone on our face in the middle of the night? It's the same thing with some of those lightweight tablets. it's so easy to just be like, and I'm drifting off and bam, I drop it. Whereas opposed to like the way you have to hold your hand to keep the book open, depending on the size of the book, you know, making sure you're at the right angle to catch the light to read it. Maybe you're not best position in your bed. Like, you know, it's just enough to keep you awake, and then, you know, a better measure on whether or not you're tired and want to put the book down and mark your spot and go to sleep.
And I feel Yeah, I don't like dropping it on my face because that hurts. Nor do I feel nor and I feel equally bad when it goes in the opposite direction and it falls on one of the cats. That happens fairly often too, since there's almost always one cat to the left of me on the TV side of the bed.
So, Joker's to the right, and here you are.
So. Yeah, pretty much. All right, so let's move on to Jamie's next email about episode 574, which is interesting. This is related to some of Monty's feedback, but also it directly relates to the beginning of the Jeremy run. Some of the discussions we had about the way Hal was coming across in that series. So, hey guys, it's Jamie. I'm going to start off by saying Monty always asks great questions and causes great conversations. He was talking about Hal Jordan being the guy who was kind of self-centered, but everyone loves him. Chad took the magnetism approach, which was great, and you both defended him well. This may be a long email, and I apologize, but that's the reason I relate to Hal. I'm a captain on a fire department and an EMT. We have to leave our loved ones all the time. We cannot put them first when others need us. It sucks, trust me. I'm also seen as an a-hole, but a lovable one, according to my friends. I say what needs to be said, and sometimes comes across the wrong way. Am I also cocky sometimes, like Hal? Yes, I do what most will not do. Am I better than them? No, but sometimes you need to act cool and tough to hide the fact that the world is dark and you are alone. I'm very charismatic and do not know why people think so highly of me. Something does not make a lot of sense there with that sentence. I'm not, but either way, let's believe it as is. I don't feel it's earned. Maybe that's where he was going. This may be a hot take, but I don't think Hal Jordan wants to be Hal Jordan. I think he would rather be John, but doesn't feel like he is. But I feel like he is good enough to be John. I relate to Hal, but I wish I was more Kyle. Does Hal treat Carol the best? Nope. But does he keep forcing his way into her life because he is selfish or because she makes him feel grounded? I hope this email is used to cause a great conversation, but if it's not, that's okay too. I love the work you guys do to make me get a break from reality. Thank you.
I don't know about how wanting to be John.
Yeah, I don't buy that.
I just think, especially with what we saw, and my mind flashes back to the brief moments that we saw of Hal in the Air Force, in specifically Jeff John's secret origin story arc, just getting kicked out and all that stuff, and his problem with authority, and just his problem with authority in general, like with relation to the Guardians, and so on and so forth. There's a sense of duty and stuff, especially now that you have added the stuff about him being a Marine and so on and so forth, and that is not going anywhere anytime soon. It's become a tentpole of his personality and history, as opposed to his time as an architect or even somebody involved in the civil rights movement. It's more his service as a Marine that they focus on, like it or not. And I don't see a lot of that reflected in Hal. He is the polar opposite. In some ways it makes sense. He's another step up, because you think of Hal's relationship with Ollie, in terms of Ollie's more liberal stuff and all the stuff that he professes over the years. And Hal is seen as the more straight-laced, law-abiding citizen thing. It's almost like, Hal is to John what Ollie is to Hal.
Yeah, I think that's a good way of looking at it. Yeah, I think generally speaking, Hal is pretty comfortable in his own skin. If you want to look at it with the explanation, in a way, the explanation Jeremy kind of gave last issue. About how the reason why Hal does what he does is more because he doesn't want people, potentially to have to suffer and deal with the things that he had to. And that's why he's always the first in. He acts without always thinking first, and he's fearless on the surface. And that's why, not because he's got a death wish or not because he's arrogant enough to just think, oh yeah, nothing bad's going to happen to me. I guess Hal's cockiness could rub people the wrong way, depending on depending on the circumstance. But I don't really think Hal really ever he's really written as an a-hole so much either. And I think that pull the word out that I want here. that when looking at this, that he just has to people. I think people gravitate to him just because he does have the confidence and because he just kind of like what Jamie said to Hal. You know, he's going to step up and do what needs to be done. Partially just because maybe no one else will do it or no one will step up first, but it's also because it's the right thing. But related to Carol, we obviously talked a lot about that, the stuff related to Carol, that, you know, Carol's not exactly she's not victimless in this either, that she perpetuates this cycle because she allowed Hal to keep coming back in. And obviously, as we're seeing now, that this kind of, you know, this chance, whatever happens with them short term, let alone long term, just seeing everything, the way things have gone, it's like the third year now of Jeremy's book, obviously you that has changed Hal and Carol's relationship as far as how people want to just easily define it, because they both understand each other more now, I would say.
Agreed. I still think we're not focusing enough on their relationship and haven't seen enough of it to warrant us getting the upcoming supposed proposal episode, but that's a story and a conversation for when we actually get that issue. So,
yes. So do you want to finish Jamie off at the last one, which would be quick?
Yeah. He said, "Hey guys, what's the comic sorting app Chad uses?" And it's called Collector's Z or Collectors or CLZ, whatever you want to refer to it as. I own it. So I think, I have no way of knowing exactly when this changed or whatever, but when I bought it, I'm pretty sure it was like a one-time purchase thing, but I'm pretty sure now it's one of those apps where you subscribe. I'm not sure, but whatever the price is or however they're setting it up, if you guys have an extensive collection, you know, 1,000 plus more comics or and growing, I highly recommend it. I it's perfect, and it's loaded onto my phone in such a way that I don't necessarily need a good data connection or Wi-Fi if, you know, there's Wi-Fi available in the area in order to access it, which is great for when you're in those cheap bins, if you can still find them, at comic conventions, because convention centers are notorious for having terrible signal. So knowing what you have, being able to maintain your what's in your collection, including individual variant covers, as well as, you know, specific ones you're looking for in your wish list, what you have in your collection, you can add in details like whether or not it's signed or not, so on and so forth, so you can keep track of that stuff. Plus, when I'm going to a convention and I'm like looking through my collection about what I can bring, I look at the guest list, look who's in Artist Alley or whatever, and I can literally run a search, not just by characters, but I can run a search by creators. So I can see if, you know, who, you know, I don't know, Ed McGuinness is going to be there. Type in Ed McGuinness. What actual Ed McGuinness comic books do I have in my collection? So I know, oh, I actually want to grab this one, and this one to get him to get signed, or if I have anything at all. So it's I highly recommend it. Whatever payment structure they're going with, I would recommend giving that a go. A lot of people are opting for League of Comic Geeks these days, but I have yet to see that they have as vast a library as CLZ does. So if you guys out there are looking for it, that's what I recommend, CLZ.
Cool. We have several from Mark. So Mark wrote back in July, "The Superman movie is the best thing to happen to Green Lantern in a long time. Events in the movie foreshadow the Green Lantern Corps being involved in the DC Universe. Can't wait to hear your guys' take on the movie." And I told him at the time, that's coming next episode. So hopefully, Mark, you enjoyed the episode.
Yeah, it's good just to see the breadth that they were doing with the Superman movie in terms of involving other slices of the DC Universe. And I look forward to more.
Indeed.
All right, what's next?
All right, let's do the next one from Mark. Mark wrote, "With the profile of Green Lantern higher than it has been in 14 years thanks to the Superman movie, why isn't DC taking advantage and focusing exclusively on Hal or John or Guy books right now? A book focused on Jessica would also do well. Hopefully DC is planning something for the Lantern's HBO Max series." Yeah, we'll see. I'm not holding. I don't have a lot of faith in that, personally. We don't know how long Hal's going to be pushed to the back burner in his own book. I'm going to assume that is specifically for an arc or maybe a few arcs. I seriously don't think that Jeremy and or DC has decided, hey, we're going to shift the focus of the main Green Lantern book, so it's not going to be Hal like for indefinitely. And it's going to be Kyle. Kyle is probably not the one they'd be promoting to the front of the line if they wanted someone else to be the main Green Lantern for a while, is just the way it is. It would be nice. I mean, John, let's be honest, for better or for worse, John has kind of had a relatively high profile, along with Hal in the main books for a while. I suspect John's going to be getting a bigger profile in the core book. I really think they're going to, I mean, we know Guy's going to have something to do, you know, post KO. So they're doing things with all of them, but the idea that they're going to kind of like piggyback, because these are going to be the three live action Green Lanterns that we're going to be seeing first. I still am a little pessimistic.
Yeah, I think, I just think this was my concern all along with the idea that they switched up the release dates in terms of Supergirl and Lanterns, because I was hoping that the marketing machine, would give Lanterns more of an edge, since it would be the next, you know, the second or, you know, third or whatever the hell you want to call it, given the, Creature Commandos and stuff like that. But regardless, the second outing, third outing of the DCU, a bit more attention being Lanterns. But because Supergirl is first, it's bothering me a little bit in the regard, because that's a theatrical movie. That is going to likely take up the lion's share of the marketing for DC in 2026. That remains to be seen. Obviously, we'll see how that marketing push happens when it gets there. I would also say, for the record, I would like to be part of the DC press junket for Lanterns in some way, shape, or form. But, you know, when that even kicks off, who knows if they do that. I mean, I know they do it for TV series, but when? Is it 2 months, 3 months, you know, ahead? Who knows? Will there be something during the Supergirl movie? Regardless, outside of that, it's what, November that we're expecting Lanterns?
No, September.
September, sorry. Yeah, we're still too early in the year for solicits to be telling us anything. I think we're seeing some moves and some shakes that something could be coming, because we got Green Lantern Dark. We got a miniseries. We got Absolute Green Lantern. Now, obviously, they were just building the Absolute Universe anyways, so it's not like it was specifically a thing that they chose to focus on. It's just, you know, they're doing the big five, the big six, the big seven, or whatever, and focusing on those for those titles. So, but Green Lantern, then they added Green Lantern Corps. We have Justice League Red doing something with Simon. We see Green Lantern stuff popping up here and there all over the place. Guy, as Mark mentioned, taking some focus there in KO. The switch over to Kyle from Hal in the main book, whether that lasts, how long that lasts, if it lasts, you know, the idea of the proposal issue coming up soon, which I mentioned earlier, there's things happening kind of widespread that would make me think, oh, they're shaking up things a little bit, but we're not yet at the point where it's fully shooken up. You know, just little vibrations. The T-Rex hasn't arrived yet, but we're seeing the ripples in the water. So I just think, I think we're still on the verge of seeing something for Lanterns, but I am fully agreeing with Mark, though, here, that I actually thought we would see more by now. I don't know what in my mind was clinging, what my mind was clinging to even justify that thought. But I would say that if we don't hear of, see something by the time summer starts, I'm going to be disappointed.
Yeah, I think we just have to play it by ear. I don't think it would be nice to see even if it's just a mini or something that focuses on, which may have nothing to do with the TV show, but just has Hal and John teaming up to do something. That would kind of be nice, feeding off of that, or have them teaming up and getting more of their past, like one of some of those. Like Jeremy gave us, I think it was Jeremy that gave us, or unless it was in the Hampton book, the unknown, the story about a Hal and Guy, Hal and John at the diner and things like that. That was right before, I think in the Jeremy book, because it was right before fake John sacrificed himself, right? Yeah. That's what it was, before fake John sacrificed himself. Hyper time John. So something like that would be nice, but I don't know. They don't seem to be particularly organized when it comes to this, and it seems like it does still seem like agenda pushes a lot of what Green Lanterns they want to focus in on a lot, which is why the Kyle thing somewhat puzzles me, which maybe points to the fact that maybe some of that is changing. But let's see how long Kyle is in the lead, if you will, and if there's a particular reason why he is, as opposed to, well, we think Kyle's, you know, deserves more page time or deserves a focus because it's been so long since he's been the focal point or anything. We'll see. But I still think they seem to given the choice, and I have no issue with Jessica, even though, again, does she deserve to be leader of the Corps? No. But I would still suspect they'd be much more likely to push on us, Joe and Kelly and Jessica and maybe even Ellie and God help us, Simon, probably more than they would like to push certainly Kyle and Guy, generally speaking. But we'll see. Fingers crossed.
All right, Shane?
Yes, I'll do Shane. Revisiting early Chad Mark episodes. Chad Mark, I've been inspired to revisit some of your early episodes as host thanks to the Green Lantern by Robert Venditti omnibus that I recently bought. I remember back in the early days of New 52 Green Lantern that despite enjoying Geoff Johns' run as writer tremendously, up to that point, I finally dropped Green Lantern during the Third Army storyline because I did not like the Guardians being turned into the genocidal monsters. I felt like Johns had finally run out of ideas and it was such a dark storyline, but I gave Robert Venditti a shot when he became the new writer, and I'm glad I did. I enjoyed the story, and my enthusiasm led me to look for podcasts doing Green Lantern reviews. I think my first Lantern Cast episode ever was episode 173, almost ours too, in January 2014, which I listened to again today. I enjoyed the episode then and now, and I've continued to listen ever since. Hard to believe it's been almost 12 years. Keep up the good work, Shane. Oh God, yes, it's hard to believe it's been increasing every minute by minute, day by day.
No, it's he mentions the Robert Venditti omnibus, which is interesting because I actually didn't know that was coming out until it was already out, that Venditti's run was getting an omnibus. And as we speak about this, I think we're on the verge of the second volume of that coming out by now. So I need to buy that at some point to, you know, round out some of the stuff on my shelf. Not that I have shelf space. So that'll be a quandary in and of itself. If I look back on it, I don't really like Third Army either. I think if I wasn't involved with the podcast in some way, shape, or form, or, you know, it being part of my social circle at the very least, and wasn't still new enough to Green Lantern, you know, because I was still early in my asking questions of Jim and Dan and, you know, trying to learn things and like really soaking up the lore. I think if I had been a more experienced fan, I probably also would have dropped Geoff Johns's around sometime either in, during, immediately after the Third Army stuff, because I didn't like Third Army.
Third Army was very problematic on multiple levels. First of all, it was being promoted as if this was this really big event.
Third part in his trilogy.
Yeah. And they had to kind of it would have been more the fourth part, because I guess Rebirth was the first Sinestro Corps.
Yeah, some people
I know what you mean.
Consider Rebirth a part of his trilogy. They said Sinestro Corps War Blackest Night, and then some people were pitching Third Army or First Lantern.
First Lantern would be the only one that would have been. But the point of all of it being that at the time we all thought that Third Army was going to be something big. It's so much, and it's their own fault because it's the way they were marketing it, that that's when they literally had to come out and tell you, oh no, this is not, you know, the next big Green Lantern story, but it paves the way for the next big Green Lantern story. Now, if we also would have known, and maybe it wasn't 100% set in stone by the time Third Army was beginning, that Johns was absolutely out the door, then that probably would have kept some people on a little bit longer too, if they would have realized that, hey, once we begin Third Army and finish that and roll into Wrath of the First Lantern, that, hey, once we roll through all those chapters and all these different Green Lantern books, boom, Geoff Johns is going to be gone. Yeah, I mean, there are a lot of what Geoff Johns did with the Guardians kind of was highly questionable. You can make a case that it's not that
unorthodox.
it's dialing it up to 11 or 12, but you could certainly say that the building blocks were there.
It's not without precedent.
It's the difference between you may not like it, and you could try to make a case, well, this, I don't think they would do this, and I don't think they would do that. But at least based on what we had seen in them before, the setup for that potentially happening was not out of left field, a la Hal and Emerald Twilight, being, because that storyline was rushed, or as people like to use also, Daenerys in episode 7.5 of Game of Thrones. It's like, if the actual doing bad things or the cracking and you seeing the person who used to be breaking down every single step of the way, so they're doing more and more things and acting less and less like the person or the people you were rooting for and you could relate to, and you're seeing this happen over a period of time, and then eventually they completely turn heel, then you can't say that the foundation wasn't laid for that, because that's good writing. So you can say, don't have to like it, and you can say, well, the Guardians wouldn't go to that extreme, but it's unnecessary. Now, the problem is, however, now it creates a perpetual cycle where we're always waiting for the Guardians to do something shitty, and to be, unfortunately, most of the writers since have picked up on some. I mean, whenever they've had Guardians to use, many of them have delved into some of this. I mean, Venditti, I don't think really did, because the Guardians were missing for forever until they did the Dark Star, the controller stuff, that arc, when we finally found out what happened to the Templar Guardians and all this stuff, when they were trying to bring back more controllers. But we saw, obviously, we had that in the Thorn run, having the evil Guardian being the mastermind, blowing up the batter and blah, blah, blah. Yeah. It's just a trope at this point. So it's like you're waiting for the shoe to drop. It's like, why everybody was like kind of looking, doing the side eye when the Guardians were talking and Jeremy's run about, oh, we don't really remember this. Our memories are incomplete. It's like, yeah, right. Like,
well, now they fucked off to who knows where, because they caught a glimpse of something, and that's something we haven't talked about, you and I, on the show, is basically where they're at.
Well, other than the fact that we've talked about for like the last two issues, probably three, unless Jeremy throws us a curve, that we haven't seen shit.
Yeah.
About what's going, anything other than Hal, we haven't seen anything. We don't know where Crona is. We don't know what Crona's doing. We don't know if the Guardians are any closer to catching up with Crona, or they found something along. Yeah, all this. That's part of why those stories are dragging. But the point is, you still keep, and plus we even saw the images, whatever they mean, of the Guardians, quote unquote, attacking Hal. Is it really Hal? Is it Crona literally taking control of Hal's actual body because he couldn't do what he wanted to do with the clone body? Is he able to take Hal? All these things. You know, is there some kind of mental implant that went in Hal when he had that vision that's part of the. All this stuff. But either way, it raises the specter of the Guardians being bad again all the time. And we're always going to think that. And that is probably a negative a legacy to that decision by Geoff Johns, I would say, is that it's going to be almost impossible. You talk about Hal coming back from Emerald Twilight. It's almost impossible for the Guardians to keep coming back and not you always thinking, well, you know, Guardians are going to Guardian at the end of the day. So you're just waiting for that shoe to drop.
All right, Mark's email.
Oh, the last one about the new one?
Yeah. Hi, Mark and Chad. I enjoyed the 2026 movie review. I really looked forward to Lanterns on HBO. I think we're really lucky to have so much Green Lantern content these days. Wanted to let you know a Green Lantern ring is in Wonder Woman number 28. I mention it because Tom King is the writer for Wonder Woman currently, and I believe he also co-created the Lanterns HBO concept along with James Gunn.
Well, he's involved. I wouldn't say he's a co-creator. There's multiple fathers to this project, including Lindelof, and there's a lot of people involved in the I don't know who, I actually don't remember who the official showrunner is, but there's a lot of writers and people involved in this show.
I wanted to mention this, talk about this briefly. I'm not specifically Wonder Woman. I'm aware of this. I saw this on Twitter when the issue came out. Someone had posted a screenshot and it showed up in the feed. I download and get a lot of the stuff that's what's going on with Lanterns and other comics elsewhere. Like, I have a stack of KO stuff to read through to catch up on what the hell's happening there. I'm obviously keeping up with Justice League Red with Simon, so on and so forth. It's just hard to figure out how we want to talk about those things on the show, because there have been times we've made attempts to keep up with Lanterns elsewhere, like with Justice League Last Ride or other things. And obviously Mark wants to put his head through the wall when I just mention those concepts. So he's not really open to any further suggestions of me as making suggestions of keeping things up, and for a fair reason. So how we choose to cover those moments, like A Green Lantern Ring and Wonder Woman 28, really remains to be seen. I would like to do it in some way, whether we devote an entire episode to here's what's happened with Green Lantern elsewhere in the DCU for the quarter of whatever, or we make it just a regular segment. It's kind of hard to do that because we kind of try to keep recording to, you know, a certain time constraint. So, you know, forcing in yet another segment and stuff like that, I don't know how that would work. So I would just ask you guys, how do you want to hear us catch up with Green Lantern elsewhere outside of the main issue stuff that we're reviewing? Is any consistency to it, you know, amenable to you? Would you rather it all just be in one info dump once a quarter or something like that? How do you want to hear it? Because I've been wanting to do it, but in a way that doesn't cause Mark to want to blow his brains out, and in a way that's actually entertaining for anybody who's listening, because obviously that's the point.
Yeah, we have talked about doing a general episode, because there's other things that there's the less than stellar Green Arrow episode with an issue with Convergence Parallax. There's that. So there's a bunch of different things. So probably, yeah, that's probably the most likely approach, is that we'll talk about, we won't do actual real reviews. We'll just basically give like a relatively brief summary of what happens in the story and you know, what we thought of it and things like that. So that's probably what we'll do. But
yeah. All right.
All right. This is from Monty. This is another one that goes way, way back, as in very early on in Jeremy's run and the first issue of the Alan Scott mini. We actually thought we had done this one before, and we realized after we did the last bunch of feedback that we apologize, Monty. We thought we had gone back to your oldest one, but this one slipped through. Hey, guys, how's it going? Good, I hope. Well, I've arrived at the modern era of Lantern casting, having just listened to the review of the first Alan Scott issue. I'm fast approaching the part where I started sending you emails, so I can't wait to give feedback for your feedback of my feedback. So, wow, both Green Lantern 2 and Alan Scott 1 were true examples of how damn good you guys are at this stuff. Thank you, Monty. Mark and Dan often seem to fall on different sides when it comes to hot topics, so it's refreshing in these days of anonymous commenters that you got through these issues without bickering or even raising your voices, but just as important, you didn't pander to each other either. There were a few moments of brief silence where I just knew one of you guys was going to say something but decided against it. Chad has excelled in recent episodes, being the voice of reason. Here we go again for the contentious Green Lantern number 2, and pointing out that Hal's behavior could be his way of dealing with the loss of Kilowog. I was too busy being angry to be objective, so fair play to Chad for remaining so. I still haven't picked up the Alan Scott trade yet, but your episode on the subject, and indeed the controversy surrounding the changes made to his history, was another great one, mostly for the reasons detailed above. Fair and balanced reviewage from a number of different perspectives. Now, I'm usually the champion of the underdogs or the downtrodden, but logic is my true master. And someone being heterosexual and then suddenly being homosexual isn't a thing that happens, as far as I know. So it could be seen as unrealistic and a little insulting to anyone who has been through what this new Alan has had to have. Hot take. If all continuity has been restored, shouldn't it be the case that Alan remembers being into women up to a point, then was suddenly gay? I know I'm contradicting myself here. It might be an interesting story for Alan to try to figure out why that is, realize that it's childish and fickle gods, the DC writers, in the words of Bill Willingham, and enact a plan of revenge. I'd buy that for a dollar. Technically speaking, I guess the one part of the Alan Scott story we really haven't gotten is what exact. I guess we're supposed to assume just because all his relationships with men led to people being killed, and the fact that the era that he was getting into, that he just stayed hidden because of the repercussions, he was hiding from himself. I mean, but I was going to say the only other thing we haven't really gotten in the retconned Alan Scott history is the fact of what exactly made him go to women. And that's probably all the only thing they would give us, I guess.
There's also that theory that if you lie to yourself long enough, or you tell the same lie long enough, you start to believe it yourself.
Yeah, except this retcon never made him show even an inkling of being attracted to women. It would be, that's why, like I've said, it'd be easier if they just made it where he was maybe he had bisexual tendencies, maybe, but he never acted on them to start with. And then over time, he became more curious. And then eventually the two ships crossed in the night and he realized he kind of was belonged more on the other side.
Yeah.
So finishing up on his last a few points. So I'm reading the early mid-80s Green Lantern issues at the moment, and I'm reminded why I love the 80s stuff so much. Taking Hal away from Earth gave Mike W. Barr and later Joey Cavallari the chances to tell some pure sci-fi tales, including one of my favorites, A Loop in Time, issue 158. And still to this day, one of the worst things a villain has ever done in the Green Lantern comic, issue 162. And the tales of the Green Lantern Corps backups really start to take off here, including what must be some old Dave Gibbons, some of Dave Gibbons' first work for DC. Then comes the Power War, where the existence of rings without the yellow weakness is revealed. I miss the benevolent guardians. See, that's appropriate timing. Even when it seemed like they were wrong, they turned out to be right. Stupid theory. If there's a green battery on Earth, does that mean the long gestating rage seed will become a new red battery? Then all the other colors follow somehow, and then we get a story where everyone on Earth is aligned along emotional lines. Well, that's it for now. See you again in another month or so. Bye. I'm not going to read his quote, but we kind of decided we weren't going to do the quotes. Besides, we're so out of order now, it won't work. P.S. I just watched those 60s Green Lantern cartoons on YouTube. They turned Tom into a Venusian named K'Rol. He basically looks like Tom, but crossed with Wonder Twins. Oh, yeah. It is kind of funny about the power battery. Yes, the rage seed, as we found out, was either completely forgotten or not ever in Jeremy's plans. But I do like the fact that Monty was looking ahead as far as the idea of having potentially like all the different cores or maybe being pulled together in the same place.
You genius, you.
Yes, that's right. Call that one a long time in advance.
Yeah. Yeah, I really do want to go back and read some of the stuff that he's talking about, because I've perused that stuff in the past, but I don't know that I've ever actually sat down and read issues at a clip, now that my collection is a little bit more full these days. I think I still have some stuff to flesh out, but I'm pretty sure that my Volume 3 Green Lantern stuff is complete. Not the Kyle run, but everything before the Kyle run. I still have, like, I think maybe 15 or 20 issues of the Kyle run I still need to get. But everything up to and including Emerald Twilight from that Green Lantern number one, I think that's still considered Volume 3. I have all of that, and I relatively recently completed that in terms of my history of buying comics. So since I completed it, I haven't yet sat down and just picked up that entire run and just read like 1 through 50. But he's obviously talking about some other stuff in terms of even earlier things.
Yeah, well, it could be some cool stuff to delve back into at some point.
For sure. All right, what else we want to do?
Okay, so yes, Monty, there's one more email from you. One more. We will do that the next time we do. Actually, the next time we do any feedback, which probably won't be in its own episode, probably when we have about at least 10 minutes after we cover whatever the agenda is for a given recording, we'll put yours to bed. So we have a voicemail for Corwin. So we're going to play that now, and then we will discuss.
It's showtime. Hey, fellas, it's Corwin. Thanks for the shout out. Thanks for the love. I think my name was mentioned like 3 times on one episode. So I wanted to call in. Of course, we usually chat, we message each other anyway, but for the listeners out there, you know, they don't really know. So I just wanted to say, hey, what's up? Listened to the last couple episodes, and wow, so surprised you're just watching Shin Godzilla. It's definitely an odd duck at times, especially with the forms they put him through. But it was also created by the creator of Neon Genesis Evangelion, and yeah, Mark, you're right. It definitely touched on some of the impotency of government and how sometimes they sit around talking when they should be taking action. So there's a lot of layers to that movie, which people don't really catch sometimes. And definitely do a Google search on that last scene, because there's some pretty cool stuff in the original, like, drawings and rendering that they cut from the movie. But that last tail scene has some pretty interesting stuff. Besides that, still chugging along with the Green Lantern books. I think they are stepping up. I'm enjoying it. I'm not super loving it, but definitely enjoying it. And I will hit you guys back later with some other feedback. Peace. Oh, and if I wasn't so lazy, I would actually, like, recorded this on my computer and put like the Beetlejuice, actual Beetlejuice at the beginning. Peace.
It's showtime.
All right. So, Corwin, well, we're glad you got multiple shout outs. So that's always a plus.
Yeah, he was talking about Shin Godzilla and.
No, I know. I know. So. I hadn't forgotten that part. I was.
No, I don't have any experience with Evangelion, so I don't know what he's.
Yeah, I would say, well, Shin Godzilla. I mean, it's whatever the access I have to it. I mean, I think I know Shin Godzilla was released last year, right back mm-hmm. in the theaters.
Yeah.
Came close to saying I'm actually glad I watched it on HBO Max. I think because I was able to watch it multiple times and I. Even with that questionable, goofy first form, it was an interesting Godzilla movie for the reasons we discussed and Corwin mentioned. So yeah, I enjoyed it.
Yeah, and we got more Godzilla stuff coming this year, and I've been seeing trailers and stuff peek up for Monarch season 2. So.
Yeah, that's true too.
Yep, I really hope they start putting out Monarch stuff on Blu-ray because I want that in my collection. But whatever. All right, what's next?
Oh, so I guess next we want to do an epilogue on our McFarlane Jessica Cruz conversation for last week, which like many of our fate is that it seems like many topics that we talk about become almost instantly outdated 2 seconds after we record, and this was literally one of them considering we recorded on Thursday and this happened on Friday? It was Friday, right? Yeah, it was Friday. All this stuff happened on Friday. It happened right after we recorded.
Yeah. So you had messaged me in that morning, right?
Yeah. I saw a post on Instagram, and I think it actually was the McFarlane Instagram thing. I think did post it. I think other people began posting it, but I think I might have seen it on the McFarlane site first, telling you that the Jessica Cruz McFarlane figure, which we didn't think was going to be available for pre-order because they made it sound like it wasn't, that all of a sudden at noon Eastern time it was supposedly going to be available in multiple places. It wasn't a one just like the Hal Jordan one wasn't. It wasn't a single place that was exclusive, but
Walmart, Target, and GameStop.
Yeah, but as just like the Hal Jordan experience, GameStop seemed to be the best, most likely place to get it.
Yeah. We were refreshing sites and everything, and noon Eastern came and went, and then it was over on GameStop. I was refreshing all three sites that about five, six minutes after the link went live, but the link didn't work. Like Jessica yep. showed up in the results, but it didn't actually take you to a page. The page it was taking to was just saying that the content wasn't available or something.
Yes.
So we just kept refreshing and refreshing, and it took quite a while for anything to happen, because it was finally about 10 minutes later, I immediately say to you in our conversation, it's live, go. So it didn't really go live until about 15 after, 11:15 my time.
Yeah,
your central.
Time. Yeah.
12:15 marks Eastern. So we both got one on GameStop, and then it pretty much sold out 10 minutes later. And then it was kind of like Emerald Twilight was, where maybe once or twice for the rest of the day, it would suddenly pop up again as being available for people to order and then disappear again.
Yeah, it was not like what happened once you realized, like on the McFarlane, that was the McFarlane site. Obviously the Walmart site, the Emerald Twilight figure came back a few times, but that probably was only because Todd was coming on to speak. But we know on the actual McFarlane site, once people realized it was live there, that hung out for like several days. The Jessica thing was, it only was out there for a few hours, where if you hit it on and off, then sometimes it would be back available to order on GameStop and sometimes not. But then it just pretty much was out. So but Jessica is a pre-order. It's the beginning of February. I think she ships. I actually got my Hal. I got my Hal on Sunday, actually.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of people, photos online of people with their Hal.
I didn't open it. I may not, but I don't like the packaging of those too much compared to the other McFarlane figures.
Yeah, Jessica is a $30 figure. Shipping and handling,
brings it up to 40, essentially.
Yeah, basically. Mine was $40.03 after shipping and handling and taxes, which was... a concern and a blocker for some people. Like Jim said, he thought that was too much to shell out for a figure, which I don't blame him. But it was another case of I don't know. I think I consider it news that Green Lantern is back in the public eye a little bit. It could just be collectors knowing that Mattel DC Multiverse Jessica is like $100 figure right now, and them wanting to jump on, you know, yet another exclusive Jessica figure because it's going to generate the same, you know, audience for it. But I don't know. Either way, I think it's a good sign.
No, it is. It is. Not related to Page Punchers, just related to any of the McFarlane lines. We know, you know, we're going to be getting a Laura Flea. So it would be nice to get, say, Walker would be nice. Mm-hmm. It'd really be nice to get a Sam Walker since we've had so few of those. It'd be nice. Hell, it'd be nice to get talk about obscure figure. It'd be nice to get a Sodom Yat.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because other than that friggin' awesome Mattel figure, that's the only Sodom Yat figure, not counting the Hero Clicks, that we've ever gotten. And that's a fantastic figure. That's one of my favorite. I mean, Mattel did such a nice job back when they were doing those DC Heroes, a Classic Hero, whatever the hell that line was, Superheroes, the DC Universe line. The Sodom Yat one was really. And I still think that's my favorite John Stewart figure, the Mattel one that they did.
This was in the era when they did like that Blue Lantern Kyle, Yellow Lantern Hal.
It was before. I think it was tech. I think it was. It's clearly in the same era, but I think it was a little bit before that. Okay. I think those two packs were on the back end of the Mattel license. Yeah, the Abin Hal 2-pack. They had that. They had the green. They had the Kyle. Blue Kyle, Yellow Hal.
I'm just remembering the blister packaging.
Yeah, just like they had the Cyborg. They had one like with Cyborg Superman, and they had a Mongol one, and I think it was Mongol. They had a bunch of those. But
they even did a wave for the Green Lantern movie.
Yes, they had. I think they had one or two. They had one or two waves of Green Lanterns, and they had other just regular waves, numbered waves that were not all that were not dedicated 100% to Green Lanterns, but you had a lot. I think they did that. They did a lot of the Deputy Lanterns. They did like Adam. They did Lex Luthor. I think the Lex Luthor I have is.
They did some of the White Lantern stuff too, didn't they?
Yeah. I mean, I'm looking at right here on the wall. I got White Lantern Flash and White Lantern Hal. Plus the Build-A-Figures. That's where they had that awesome Kilowog Build-A-Figure, the one that broke on me. Shattered.
Yeah, the only White Lantern figure I have is the DC Direct White Lantern Hal. I had Sinestro, but he broke in shipping, and during one of my moves a few years ago, one of his arms fell off, and I can't get it back on.
Even with glue? Too difficult?
Yeah, there's something wrong with it. I don't know. I'd have to, yeah.
Yeah, but they had the awesome Arkillo Build-A-Figure, the Kilowog Build-A-Figure, the Anti-Monitor Build-A-Figure.
Yeah, the Kilowog Build-A-Figure I wish I had because I don't like the DC Direct one because he's like very pink for some reason. Yeah,
but Mattel did a really nice job. But yeah, we will see if McFarlane gives us some other characters. I'm glad it's Jessica. Like I actually wouldn't mind a Joe if she looked like Joe, if it was more like. Far Sector.
Well, there's a photo I've seen making the rounds on social media comparing this figure out of package to the Mattel DC Universe Jessica, and she looks significantly better than the original Jessica figure. So
I think I agree. I think
especially in the face.
Yeah, the face. I agree. I think I might have preferred the build the body wise on the Mattel Jessica more, but I agree the face. It's just such a stark contrast because the new Jessica is so thin. Not that Jessica was ever not thin, but I mean that she is just much more of a thin based sculpted figure as opposed to so. But she's tall and she's taller too than the original figure. But yeah, I mean I wouldn't have gone crazy to get this because I didn't have a Jessica figure. I didn't fight too hard I think when the first one came out to get it either. But I'm glad this kind of fell in. I mean, it was a perfect storm because I happened to be sitting in the waiting room getting my software updated at Honda, and I just happened to be scrolling through. I was reading, and I took a break because I can only read so long before I need to take a break. So then I put my book down, checked my phone, and that's when I saw this thing, and that's when I messaged Chad. Then the question was whether I was going to be home in time to even order this because luckily I was, even though it didn't drop. I had a little more leeway than I would have thought since it didn't really drop at 12 anyway. But you didn't know that at the time. But luckily, that all's well, that ends well in that case. And it's always a chance you still might get, you might find these in the store. But
I'm fairly confident I will see one.
Yeah, you have more. You have more. You have more stores around
because
you
because of the you know, the Kismet or whatever of you messaging me. I was like, we had the chance to buy it then and there. I was like, okay, well then now I won't have FOMO. So
if I was gonna feel bad about getting one of the two, I would say it was Hal only. And I don't think I'm not saying I do. I'm just saying if I was going to have regret, I would regret paying the same money for Hal because I have so many Hals now. It's not like the old days. You know, it's not like post Emerald Twilight when you were like begging for any Hal merchandise or any Green Lantern merchandise, period. And they did give you mostly Hal because they knew the Hal fans would buy it up. But
I'm looking forward to it though. It says it comes out on the 6th.
Yes. That should be it for tonight. So if you want to reach out to us, lanterncast@gmail.com. The website is lanterncast.com. You can follow us on Blue Sky, Twitter, like us on Facebook, #GLcast. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, wherever you listen to us on. Please leave us a positive review. Last but not least, if you'd like to leave us a voicemail, 708 or text 708-LANTERN, and let us know what you think.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.